While solid theological and biblical instruction is foundational to any ministry leader's effectiveness, there's something else that's critically important. When we appoint someone to lead a congregation, serve as an elder, teach our children, or provide leadership for the youth ministry, we're not only looking for a candidate who understands the Bible, it's imperative we pursue individuals who possess godly character and who live life with integrity. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll describes Paul's wise counsel to his young colleague in ministry, Timothy. In this conversation, we receive an education in what Chuck calls Christian Leadership 101.
So today we're looking again at this last bit of information that Paul wrote to his younger pastor friend and son in the faith named Timothy, 2 Timothy chapter 2. We're looking at the last seven verses together. May we stand as the verses are read, please. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 20. Now in a large house there are not only gold and silver vessels, but also vessels of wood and of earthenware, some to honor and some to dishonor. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from these things, he will be a vessel for honor, sanctified, useful to the master, prepared for every good work. Now, flee from youthful lusts and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. But refuse foolish and ignorant speculations, knowing that they produce quarrels. The Lord's bondservant must not be quarrelsome, but be kind to all, able to teach, patient when wronged, with gentleness correcting those who are in opposition, if perhaps God may grant them repentance, leading to the knowledge of the truth, and they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil, having been held captive by him to do his will.
Listening to Insight for Living. To search the Scriptures with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download his newly formatted Searching the Scriptures studies by going to insight.org/studies. And now the message called Christian Leadership 101.
There are times when competence is more important than character. Competence. It relates to what we do, and doing it with excellence. Competence has to do with having qualities, having training, having skills, having experience that all, when blended together, result in quality workmanship. Competence is usually something seen in public, displayed before the public. Character, on the other hand, has to do with what we are. It's more of a private thing, having to do with qualities we possess, showing ourselves to be morally pure and ethically reliable. Character has to do with integrity and inner strength and trustworthiness and responsibility. There are times when competence, as important as character may be, when competence is more important than character. Let's say you have a brain tumor. It's a serious thing found by this remarkable machine, that this instrument that can detect what's inside the cranium. And when it is analyzed, you are told you need to find the best neurosurgeon you can locate. He needs to be experienced. He needs to be skilled. He needs to know how to do his work with an efficiency that doesn't cause any other damage as he works on this very delicate organ of your body, your brain. What you want is a neurosurgeon known for his competence. Admittedly, the man may not be a good father at home. He may not be paying all of his taxes that he owes the government. He may be even having an affair with some other man's wife. But he is the best neurosurgeon you can find. He's the one you want to do the surgery. Because in that case, competence is more important than character. Now let's go further. Let's say this same man happens to be in your church. And as a member of your church, you understand that we're considering him to teach your adult fellowship class. Or he's going to be in an even broader leadership role. He's going to be one of our deacons. Or we're looking at him as the possibility of serving the highest office in the church as an overseer or an elder. At that point, even though you would recommend him as a neurosurgeon, you would be gravely concerned if the things I mentioned earlier were true about his character. Why? Because when it comes to spiritual leadership, character always eclipses competence. When Paul writes to Timothy words regarding ministry and leadership and the value of his becoming a man of God, as Paul would soon be leaving the earth and passing the torch to younger Timothy, Paul camps on character. A competence is woven between the lines, but very clearly we read words related to character, because when it comes to Christian leadership, character reigns supreme. How one lives his or her life at home is as important, if not more so, than how one lives his life before the public. Matters of integrity and responsibility and follow-through and honesty are all of crucial importance. If I could borrow the title that Peggy Noonan used of her book on Ronald Reagan, when I was a little boy, character was king. King. There were exceptions, admittedly, but for the most part, those who served in leadership of large companies, in the church, in places of responsibility, were more often than not people of character. When character was king, your word was your bond. Remember those words, those of you who are older? A handshake was enough to seal a contract. You look an individual in the eye, you give a firm handshake, you express your word that it will be done. There isn't a question that follows, because character was king. Integrity and responsibility were givens. Again, there were exceptions, but that was the beauty of it. Back in those days, they were the exceptions. No longer. We live in a strange time today. If you will allow me just personal words, we live in a time when, well, winning is everything. It isn't how you play the game, it's that you win at all cost. A contract really means nothing, especially if more money is offered from another team or another company. The fact that you have signed your name on the line isn't important. Because greed is good, we're being told. And morality is an option. Or as I read just this past week, immorality at times has its advantages. Oh, really? Sidney J. Harris, when he was writing for the Chicago Sun-Times, made this statement. Since most of us would rather be admired for what we do rather than for what we are, we are normally willing to sacrifice character for conduct, and integrity for achievement. Tragedy, isn't it? The Christian leader does not have that option. In the case of leadership that is truly Christian, character always trumps competence. That is the single message that Paul is driving home to the heart of Timothy in his final letter to him. That's why Paul uses examples that are so obvious to any reader. If you have your Bible open to 2 Timothy chapter 2, you'll observe that one of the first analogies is verse 3, a good soldier. Suffer hardship with me as a good soldier. He goes on to say in the next verse, he doesn't entangle himself with the affairs of this life, but he focuses on soldiering, pleasing the one who has enlisted him, obeying his commander-in-chief, or at least the company commander. A good soldier has the character to carry out his responsibilities. If that isn't enough, verse 5, you've marked this word, athlete. If anyone competes as an athlete, he does not win the prize unless he competes according to the rules. So this is a qualified athlete. The athlete with character doesn't take mind-numbing drugs, doesn't take human growth hormones, doesn't put in his body or her body illicit chemical substances to enhance his ability or her ability to fulfill the responsibilities of that particular sporting event. It's a qualified athlete, has character. He goes on to talk about the hardworking farmer in verse 6. If you haven't marked that, that's a third analogy. A soldier, verse 3. An athlete, verse 5. A farmer, verse 6. The hardworking farmer isn't known for sloth or indolence, doesn't yawn his way through the day or care little about the season of the year. Hard work is a part of character, and he gets the job done. Paul then goes on to carry out those analogies, and then he gets down to verse 15, where he says to Timothy that he is to be an unashamed workman. See the words? Be diligent to present yourself approved to God as a workman who does not need to be ashamed. It's at that last example Paul stops and pushes his finger against the sternum of Timothy and says to him in no uncertain words, get this straight, young man. You are to be diligent to be an unashamed workman. And part of that diligence works its way out in rightly handling the word of truth, which we worked on and overworked in our last message. All of these are analogies. They're word pictures that help us see truths from God's point of view. No one ever put it better than Warren Wiersbe in a wonderful book titled Preaching and Teaching with Imagination. I wish I had written these words. Listen to the words of Wiersbe. Parables start off like pictures, then become mirrors, and then become windows. He goes on. First, there is sight as we see a slice of life in the picture. Then there's insight as we see ourselves in the mirror. And then there's vision as we look through the window of revelation and see the Lord. Isn't that insightful? The story begins, or the picture begins, as simply a picture, which leads to a mirror, and you're suddenly realizing this is talking to me. You see yourself in the image. And before you're through with the scriptures, that analogy or that picture not only has become a mirror, but it's turned into a window through which you grasp the revelation of God. That's what makes the scriptures so intriguing. Now, we're not surprised then when we come to these verses before us that Paul uses analogies, but what makes us wonder is the context of them. He's talking in verse 20 about a large house, not having vessels only of gold and silver, but of wood and earthenware. What's that have to do with character and the kind of people we're to spend our time with. Well, you may remember the context from our last study, where he encourages Timothy to avoid, verse 16, empty chatter, which only leads to further ungodly kind of teaching and talk. He even adds to that, verse 17, that kind of false information will spread poison like gangrene. Remember, the Greek word is gangrene. Our same as our English word. It spreads poison among the body of Christ. And he even names two people who were guilty of spreading poison. They are, if you will, in the words of the verses of today, they are unworthy vessels. These two named here, Hymenaeus and Philetus. They have gone astray from the truth, and to make matters even worse, the end of verse 18, they have upset the faith of some. False teaching never lies on its own and remain unimportant. False teaching touches others' lives, which leads them astray from the faith, and they in turn poison others. So you must watch out, Timothy. The church is a big place. You've got to be on guard against those who are chattering heretics and poisonous teachers. Now that's the context of verse 20 and following. Look closely at the first of these analogies. Now, in a large house, see verse 20? The Greek says, in a mega house. Interesting, huh? In a mega house, there are not only gold and silver vessels, but also vessels of wood and of earthenware, some to honor, reflecting on the gold and silver instruments or implements, utensils, and those of dishonor, which would refer to those earthen and common, ignoble utensils. The Greek says mega house, interestingly, in a mega house. And I think the analogy here in the large house is the church. In the church, there will be all kinds of individuals. But he doesn't refer to individuals yet. He refers to vessels. Look at verse 20 again. There are vessels of gold and silver that you'll find in a house. So I looked around our house, and I found a vessel of silver. Don't remember asking permission to bring this, but I just reached in there and got it. And Cynthia, of course, finally did know about it as I was sort of snickering while putting it near my car, so I'd remember to bring it. That's a vessel of honor. That is a vessel that holds valuable things. It is itself valuable. And it is silver, right? It is silver. Yeah. As I recall, this is silver, okay? Now, I also brought, you who laughed are telling your age. This is called, in old-fashioned terms, a slop jar. There's a reason the edge is curved and soft. It is what I would call a comfort container. In years ago, even in the mega houses, there were not, it's the first time in my life I've ever held a slop jar in a pulpit. I want you to know that. And years ago, there were not toilets inside a house. There were outhouses. But many people lived in places where there was... It's hard to talk and take me seriously while I got this thing in my head, isn't it? There are people who lived in areas that were very cold in the middle of the night. So you would get up at night and you would use this, which was found in most every bedroom, even in the mega house. And that is a vessel of dishonor. All right? We'll leave it at that. Okay. Now I'm going to leave these two right here and count on you to concentrate as we work our way through this, because it all ties in, and if it helps drive the point home, wonderful. Look at verse 21. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from these things, he will be a vessel for honor. Please notice the only condition for becoming a vessel of honor is to cleanse yourself from that which is dishonorable. Got it? That's why the if is here, introducing a condition. If anyone, so you may be today a vessel of dishonor, you may be passing false information. You may not realize how false it is. You may have been led to believe it's true, but in fact, it is false. It is poisonous. It is unhealthy. And in order to change from that to this, from that which is ignoble to that which is noble, the verse states you must cleanse yourself from these things, and then you will be a vessel for honor. Please observe the qualifications that follow. Set apart, useful to the master, prepared for every good work. So it must be for every Christian leader. We are never going to be as attractive as this silver pitcher. We are never going to cause people to go, "Ooh, how lovely, how beautiful." That's not the point. The point is what is contained within us and the way God uses us will be for noble purposes. But it can never happen as long as we are vessels of dishonor. There must be a transformation. When we are changed from darkness to light, from unworthiness to righteousness, the Lord has done a remarkable work in our heart. Christ died for the sins and the wastefulness and the filth of our lives to make us whole, new, completely different, noble vessels with character and hopefully in the passing of time with a measure of competence. Now, you understand the large house is a picture or a word picture of the church. It's a mega house. In the church, we have wheat and tares growing. And you study them, and unless you look at the grown seed, the mature seed, you cannot tell the difference between oats and wild oats, between wheat and tares. But by the examination of them at the time of maturity, you can see the difference. Timothy, the implication is, become a mature, grown-up leader for the cause of Christ. In order for that to happen, look at verse 22. Flee, pursue. The flee represents what we get away from. We get it out of our lives, and the pursue is what we take in. Righteousness, faith, love, peace.
You're listening to Insight for Living and a message from Chuck Swindoll based on 2 Timothy 2 entitled Christian Leadership 101. To purchase the CDs or downloadable audio files that comprise this study, just go to insightworld.org/store and look for the series Paul's Swan Song. We have much to learn about becoming what Paul called a vessel of honor, so we urge you to listen tomorrow when Chuck explains exactly why he chose the silver container from home to illustrate his point. Chuck, perhaps it goes without saying, but Paul's description of the end times sounds like a review of today's generation.
Well, it's true, Dave. Paul wrote, in essence, Timothy, in the last days, people will love only themselves and their money. They will be boastful and proud, scoffing at God, disobedient to their parents, and ungrateful. They will consider nothing sacred, no self-control. They will act religious, but they will reject the power that could make them godly. Paul paints a dark picture that sounds strangely familiar, doesn't he? His warning reinforces the reality that we are truly living in the last days right now. Well, This prophetic snapshot of our times is what compels us to turn up the volume on Insight for Living. Our days are short, and our mission to fill the dark places with God's light has never been more urgent or more important. For this reason, I'm appealing for your partnership today. Now, as a valued listener, you should know that our financial reserves at Insight for Living Ministries are nearly depleted. Yet, we refuse to let this temporary deficit become a discouraging factor or a barrier in presenting the power of the gospel every day on this program. So I'm saying to you, let's band together so that none of our ministry efforts need to be curtailed. If everyone gives something, God will use each gift, large or small, to close the gap. John wrote it this way, "But these are written that you may continue to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing in him, you will have life by the power of his name." John 20:31. In these last days, we want to reach every country on the globe with the powerful, life-giving message of the gospel. Please join with us. In doing so, respond now. Your gift will make all the difference.
All right, thanks, Chuck. And here's how to respond. If you're listening in the United States, simply call 1-800-772-8888 or give online at insight.org. And let me add, when you give a donation today, we'll be pleased to send you the brand new edition of the Gospel of John with Psalms and Proverbs from the Swindoll Study Bible. With a bold blue leather-like cover, this includes many of Chuck's sermon notes, insights for practical application, and even a daily reading plan. And you can request a copy when you give a donation today. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org. Our study of 2 Timothy, Paul's Swan Song, continues Friday with Chuck Swindoll and Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Christian Leadership 101, was copyrighted in 2009 and 2015, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2015 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.